Had to get that cracker down.
I will call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, October 23rd, 2012. I would ask the audience to join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Just like to acknowledge that I'm a little bit depressed this morning. My Cardinals got defeated last night, and I was kind of hoping that they would be able to at least pull that out in second time around. But
they didn't just get beat. I mean, they got demolished.
Demolished. A little depressed. But yeah. Well, anyway, item number three is a public comment. This is an opportunity where members of the audience may address the board regarding a topic on today's agenda. Is there anyone wants to address us regarding a topic on today's agenda?
Wayne, I think we have somebody here who would like to address a specific item, and I know it's been our practice to allow them to talk to us when we get to that item, specifically talking about the canon and celebration. So I don't know how you feel about that, but I'd like to make a special call if you're going to limit conversation today.
Actually, I did ask Brett if he could attend this meeting today to be able to answer some questions that I didn't have answers to, and I would believe the nature of this report could be one that we could handle right now.
Perfect.
If it would certainly be all right, and then that would allow Brett an opportunity to get back over to the office. So if that's okay with you, it's a triplet, I believe. Okay. Would you want to come up and you and Brett? And this would be on the agenda, folks. This would be item that we are addressing now that was listed under
item number 13.
So we're just going to take that up at this time. Okay? Yeah.
Yeah, you probably need the microphone so that we can have this recorded. Since it's got my name on it, I know I'm the one who initially requested that we put this on the agenda. It's based on an email that was sent to all of us from Mrs. Triplett, and it has really been fascinating to dig in and learn some things about it. And, Wayne, I'm glad you invited Brett today because he's the county expert on this kind of stuff. So we just want to discuss...
Right.
The items.
Good, good, good. First of all, welcome, Ms. Triplett and Brett. And again, I want to apologize. I kept going back looking for my email that you may have sent me, and I didn't get it, and I may have deleted it. And the reason for this is that since the late Fred Matthiessen passed away, a lot of the information about the canon was forwarded on to me because of my long-standing work in social studies and history.
Yes.
And I had a file put together, and a few years ago we worked with planning, with our auditor's office and with facilities, and we scanned all of the documents that we have related to the canon, and I do have quite an extensive list of things that I was able to download yesterday, and I just pulled a couple things off that you may or may not have had, and I'll share, you know, that with you, but I can make those available as well regarding that. But go ahead and tell us, Ms. Triplett, what your interest is and why the timing for that is this year, as I was trying to analyze whether it would be the 150th anniversary of the Battle of Shiloh. I guess that's what I was... Yeah, okay.
I want to apologize. I have had a voice treatment, and I cannot talk well. I will get well. This is not going to kill me, but I have a voice treatment, and I can't talk well. I'm sorry, and I apologize. But I am here particularly representing the National Women's Relief Corps, of which I am a member and have been for nearly 20 years. And my family... My ancestors were very involved, so I've been interested in this. In late summer, I received an email that there were a lot of the bronze Gettysburg address plaques across the country, and we should go look for them to try to find one. And I find out there's one right in front of the courthouse that I have looked at for years and years and years. So I immediately got in my car and came over to look at it, and I could not read the inscription on the bottom, and that's why I wrote you, Mr. Clinton. And anyway, Sue Potter Vandekamp responded to my question about it very clearly and told me what it said, that it was dedicated by the Jason D. Ferguson Women's Relief Corps of Nevada. And the GAR post was also named in his honor. So, of course, we wondered, who is Jason Ferguson? So, after a great deal of research, and I am grateful to the Nevada Community Library, to the Story County Genealogical Society, the Nevada Genealogical Group, and many, many groups for finding information, but we have not exactly found when the plaque was dedicated, because the inscription says June 30th, 1930, I believe it is. But it didn't happen because they could not find a stone on which to mount the plaque. And so it was delayed, and I'm still looking for that. But in the meantime, I have learned a great deal about Mr. Ferguson, and also that the canon was presented here in 1908 or 1909, they're not sure which, and it was actually a Confederate Parrott 3-inch cannon, and I see it's been painted. I don't know just when that happened, but it's okay. Anyway, it's because it is the sesquicentennial of the Civil War that I thought it very fitting and appropriate that we should rededicate those glorious artifacts, and to Jason Ferguson and to other Story County veterans who died, not only in the Civil War, but all wars since then. I especially found that Jason D. Ferguson's father and three brothers, I think it is, and sister, moved to Story County and settled in Lafayette Township, but I think it's actually Howard Township now. And when the Civil War began, believe it or not, there were fewer than 800 people living in Story County. Anyway, Jason enlisted. He was one of the first ones to go. I think it was actually the second call for soldiers. And he enlisted in September of 1861. And unfortunately, he was killed in the Battle of Shiloh. He was in the 12th Infantry. I should tell you that also. And he was killed in the Battle of Shiloh on April 6, 1862. And he is also buried there. So I just wanted to give you brief background about the connection with Jason Ferguson and the bronze plaque of the Gettysburg Address and the cannon. And I want your permission, because it's on county property in front of the courthouse, that we might try to plan some sort of an event with Mr. McLean's assistance, because I'm just Jane Public Citizen. I have no idea how to go about these things. And I appreciate very much your time in allowing me to speak on behalf of this event that I hope will take place.
Great. Thank you for that background on Mr. Ferguson as well. And as I can tell you, the information that I have really doesn't give a lot of the information that you just shared. I would love to add that to the information that we currently do have on file here. I've got several emails where I've got pictures and information that we have archived, but it is quite a thick volume to go through, but I can certainly make a lot of that available for you. But I asked Brett particularly because the types of celebrations that you were talking about generally is something that is not county-driven, but it's coordinated through the various legions and so forth. So he can tell you a little bit more about this, and then whether or not there is an opportunity that through his office that we may do something in the nature of some type of special dedication.
Okay.
And then that could certainly be generated through the Story County Board of Supervisors if in conjunction with our Veterans Commission.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah, I was looking at several dates. You know, the Civil War was 1861 to 1865, and then Jason was killed in 1862. So I was looking at those dates. So the war began April 12th, 1861. General Lee surrendered April 9th, 1865. And then President Johnson declared the end of the war in May 9th of 1865. And then the last Confederate surrendered June 23rd, 1865. And then the other date we was looking at, well, actually, when we talked last night, Gretchen was talking about Veterans Day. And I guess in my mind and the commission also, is Veterans Day we celebrate all veterans and all wars. So I don't know that that'd be a fitting day to, if we were going to do something for an individual. I mean, if we was to do that, we have 14 Vietnam veterans that died in war from this county, and not even going further to look at Korea and World War II. So there's probably several. If we was to do something for an individual on Veterans Day. So I'd like to stay away from that. Another date that comes to mind was February 7th, 1901, was when the cannon arrived here in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be a fitting date there. Or, of course, the day that I think we talked last night, April 6th, 1862 was when Jason was killed. So,
what was the date of the Gettysburg Address? Does anybody have that?
November 19th, 1864. I know because my great great grandmother was in attendance.
Yeah. So the 150th celebration of the Gettysburg Address, which is what that
next
was,
year
would be 14.
Yes.
Right.
I'm sorry. Yeah. 2014.
Yeah. If you look at the 150-year anniversary, would have been last April for when Jason was actually killed.
When Jason was killed.
Yeah. Yes.
And so I'm looking for, first of all, I think it's completely fitting and appropriate that we would rededicate this cannon. I know, Paul, you've been parking down there for years and years and years. I know for me, the last 4 years, I've been walking by the cannon and never even really considered the history and what it means. So
I think
it's completely appropriate.
True of most.
I just would like to tie it to some specific date,
yes,
whatever that is, and with its attachment to the Gettysburg Address plaque, to me, that since we've already missed the 150th anniversary of his death, that may be the most appropriate place to tie it. But I'd like to commit, while the county does not, I guess, play a role in necessarily organizing things, this is on our property. I mean, it would be us driving this, and I think it would be asking Brett to drive putting something together. We just need to tie it, as I see it, to the right date and make sure we do this thing right.
Right.
I'm in complete agreement with you, Brett, on Veterans Day and the importance of honoring all our veterans on that day, so not singling anybody or any one particular thing out. But there's got to be a place that this can fit for us to rededicate it.
Correct. And also, and Ricky hit a good note there, in this county, with all the legions and VFWs that we have, those are kind of the driving forces for, you know, Veterans Day, Memorial Day. We have the Patriotic Council here in Nevada that takes care of Memorial Day. Memorial Day would be maybe a fitting day also to play tribute during the Memorial Day program. And then it actually starts here on the property of Story County with a flag raising ceremony.
Sure.
So that might be something that we could do, you know, next Memorial Day, May 30th.
Well, if you could just work with Gretchen and you all come up with a date that you would can agree on and then work with us on trying to put that together, and the various organizations that honor our veterans in the county. I think we can come up with an opportunity to do something here. And so I would suggest that.
You bet. Yeah, we started talking last night. Actually, I didn't get her email till yesterday, and so I called her last night and we talked. And I've already talked to the commander of the American Legion here in town, and she's on board with doing something. We talked a little bit about, and you've heard the GAR, Grand Army Republic.
You bet.
Okay, and a lot of, we've mentioned this different times at different meetings. What the GAR was, though, it was before the American Legion, the DAV, the VFW, all those. So you can kind of relate to what that was about. And they were founded in 1866 and dissolved in 1956. So that was kind of interesting to know a little bit about the GAR. And then, of course, with General Logan declared in 1868 May 30th as Decoration Day, which later became Memorial Day. So that's why I guess I was kind of thinking of right. Memorial Day might be a good time to do that. So
okay.
Yeah, well, we'll keep working on this. And
right.
I would like to spell out, since Brett told you about the GAR, the Women's Relief Corps is an auxiliary to the GAR. We are still functioning. And as Brett said, the men's group, the last veteran died, I think is why they are no longer active. But the women's group formed in Denver in 1883, but actually the work was going on in all the states that were formed before, right after the Civil War and during the war, taking care of veterans and orphans. I cannot tell you how grateful I am sincerely for your deep interest and sincerity. Thank you so much.
Well, Gretchen, last point, and you might try to see if you could do something with our local schools, particularly on the GAR. For 19 years, when I was in my former job, we had a Pioneer Trails Day, and we would go walk through Story County Pioneer cemeteries and trails. And the question that I always ask my students is, when they looked at all the symbols at the grave sites, what did GAR mean? And all the years that I had, I'd never had more than two students that actually knew what that symbol represented. And so that was an opportunity to really talk about the Grand Army of the Republic and its significance. So it's something that is just not even mentioned in any of the history lessons and conversations that go on in some of the schools. So as part of this outreach, we might try to get them to at least talk about it. You know, a lot of times they look for creative writing opportunities. Kids can, you know, just envision role-playing situations and doing some research. So that may be a possibility that we could help.
I like that
get some
idea.
Education with students. Yeah.
I can tell you also that the recorder also told me that at the Nevada Cemetery there are two graves of Charge of the Light Brigade veterans.
Oh.
Now, that blew me away, and that would work perfectly with what you're saying.
Exactly.
And I even went to visit one grave, but I haven't located the sexton yet to find out precisely where the other grave is and who that man is. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
If you want to call the Parks Department in Nevada, the Parks Director oversees the cemetery.
Yes, I know.
Gene Fritz is the
Yes, and his phone number, I think, is on the website,
okay.
But I haven't called him.
If you call the Parks Department, you can leave a message there for him.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you sent us the email.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We do appreciate that. And thank you, Brett,
Thanks,
for
Brett.
Coming over and working with us on this.
Appreciate her bringing this to light.
Right. Yes. You bet. Okay, then going back up then to item four. Well, first of all, are there anyone else that had any topics for discussion? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move to item four, consideration of the minutes of 10-9-12 and 10-16-12.
Move approval.
Second.
Been moved and second the approval of the minutes for both 10-9 and 10-16. Hearing no further comments, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, minutes are approved. Item 5, consideration of personnel action. All personnel actions as submitted.
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and second the approval of personnel action. Hearing no comments, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Personnel actions approved. And then consideration of claims, item 6. Any concern here?
$1 million. It's your turn.
I move approval.
Second.
I love that. Okay, it's been moved and second the approval of claims. No hearing, no comments. Roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. I'm going to change the procedure. Normally, we just do this all in one motion, but it's, since it's under $1 million, I wanted to make sure we had a roll call.
We just need to keep it there.
Right. Consent agenda. Add road closure 1335, 1336. Utility permit 1332. Again, I'll repeat. Road closures 1335. And 1336, and one utility permit, 1332. All other items are good to go.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
It's been moved and second the approval of the consent agenda with noted changes. Roll call, Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay. Okay, then moving on to item 8 under public hearing. We had an item under number 1 that was a table, it was in consideration of Ordinance 217, amending Chapter 10. I know we have Assistant County Attorney Jessica Reynolds here, and I think there's probably a question from the board relating to, we don't believe this is going to come back to us before December or sometime in January, so we're wondering if we couldn't just identify that date that we expected back and not necessarily have this on the agenda each week when we're not contemplating any action. So would you want to maybe just come up and comment to us on that, please?
Good morning, gentlemen. My recommendation regarding that would be a motion to postpone to a date certain under Robert's Rules of Order. I would identify the proposed date that you plan to have this item come back on the agenda and move to postpone to that date certain. And then you won't have to bring it back up every week.
So we need to take it off the table first to
right,
do that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I move that we move this item off the table.
Second. Been moved and second to move this item off the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Okay. Great.
Since we've referred this to staff and ask that the Planning and Zoning Commission take a look at it. We know that next time the Planning and Zoning Commission is going to meet is in December, so reasonably to me it's not going to happen before the holidays. I would suggest that we put a date certain of our second meeting in January as this item coming back before us.
So that would be the second, 7 days, so the ninth probably, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably about the 9th and about our 8th. Is it the 8th? Okay, I know the 2nd is our, yes, it's a Wednesday. Yes, it'll be the 8th. It'll be, right, it'll be
yeah,
the 8th.
So.
Okay. 2013, okay. So the proposed date would be to bring this back for consideration on January 8, 2013. Okay, it's been moved and second that we postpone the current discussion regarding this ordinance, and it will be brought back to the board for consideration after staff review at our January 8th, 2013 meeting. All right. Any further comments?
It's a public hearing. It's still listed under public hearing. Do we need to have the public hearing on that?
Correct.
Yes, we would.
Yeah,
yes,
that'll be your first consideration, of that, your first reading.
Right. So with that, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you. Item number two is a consideration of Resolution 1335 to authorize a tax increment revenue loan agreement and to enter into a tax increment revenue loan agreement in a principal amount not to exceed $3,185,000. We also have in audience today Treasurer Renee Tweed. Thank you for joining us as well. And I'm going to ask Rick, I know you've been talking to Assistant County Attorney Jessica Reynolds as well regarding this and so forth. Is there any additional information that you want to discuss prior to getting into this?
Well, I just think it's important that we're always clear. What we're talking about doing here is borrowing the money necessary to complete the three projects that we've already approved. We're not talking about doing anything more. We're not talking about doing anything less. Simply completing what we've already approved, clearly we've got to be able to pay for those. I would point out that part of this almost $3.2 million, $500,000 of it would go to pay back the original loan that we took of $500,000 last year as we established TIF and these projects. And as I understand this resolution that we're getting ready to take action on, it simply authorizes it. It gives public notice to the idea that we're going to take out this loan. It does not identify the mechanism that we're going to use for the loan, and that would be our next step now to go ahead and get it done, with the understanding that we're still working off that December 1st deadline where we have to certify debt to the auditor. Jessica, anything to add to that?
A 100% accurate. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Okay. Questions, anything, Paul, regarding what we have before us at this time? Renee, if you've heard this, obviously we are making no commitment in terms of a source at this time, but to know that we do need to move forward with a full notice of incurring this debt for those projects. Okay. All right. And if no other comments are necessary, I would entertain a motion.
I think we need to open public hearing.
Oh, excuse me. No, this is a public hearing. Yes, it is. I'm sorry. Thank you. We'll open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone that would like to speak to this topic. Okay. We'll close the public hearing portion. Thank you. Board?
I'd move approval of Resolution 1325, authorizing the tax increment revenue loan agreement.
Okay.
Second.
It's been moved and second. The approval of Resolution 1325 to authorize tax increment revenue loan agreement, as stated. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton, aye. Resolution 1325 is adopted. And be mindful of our December 1st date. Okay? All right. Moving on to item 9 under additional items is the consideration of a monetary offer of $7,000 in exchange for the tax certificate for parcel number 12-8-200-225, locally known as 405 Lincoln Highway, Colo, Iowa. Mr. Toot, I'm going to kind of refer to you just a little bit on this and maybe bring us up to date on action that we took prior to this on a similar request for a reduced amount for our consideration in which we took no action on at that time.
Certainly. About a month ago, we received a written offer for a reduced amount of the taxes. I think it's currently almost $8,000 with taxes, penalty, interest, and it includes a $1,900 assessment from the city of Colo for a nuisance abatement, and I believe it also includes the current year taxes. So just short of $8,000. We received an offer of $4,000. As part of the due diligence, myself and the treasurer and her one of her deputies and Ms. Reynolds went to the city of Colo, met with the mayor and the city clerk to discuss their share of what was owed. It happened to be on a Monday. They had a council meeting that Monday evening. The city took no action whether they would reduce or waive their assessment. During that public process of the city council meeting, there was a couple other individuals who became aware of the possibility that this property or the tax certificate would be sold. We received a letter from an individual that was also interested in the property and made an offer to pay the full amount. The initial offer didn't include any monetary amount. In my conversations with him, I advised him that he needed to include a monetary amount. In the meantime, 2 weeks ago, I think we took no action on the initial offer of $4,000, so we let that offer expire. I had a conversation with that individual, and he thought that he'd probably spent enough money and time on that effort and was going to be done with that. We received this letter on the 17th for an offer to pay $7,000 for the in exchange for the tax certificate on that property. So that's what brings us here today. It's my understanding if we this board can elect to assign that certificate to Mr. Farron in exchange for the $7,000.
Okay.
So there's been a little discussion back and forth which comes first. That's my understanding, the check comes first and then
correct. Yeah, that's correct. And then once we receive that, then the document that I've forwarded, we can have the assignee sign, and Mr. Clinton as the chairperson of the board, once you take action to sell it for the $7,000.
Okay. Other questions?
Yeah, one of my concerns was last time this came before us, that it didn't feel like there was enough notice to the public. I feel this time anybody who wanted to be interested in something like this now has had an opportunity to express interest. This is the one bona fide offer that we have in front of us now. It is for an amount greater than our first offer and much closer to what is actually owed on the property. And so I would make a motion that we accept this offer.
Second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded that we accept the offer of the $7,000 in change for the tax certificate with a full understanding that after we receive the check and that amount, then we could move forward with assigning the certificate and so forth to the new owner. So are there further questions? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. And I want to thank you, Jessica, as well as Paul, working on this. And
learning
I
experience.
Know it has been. Good. Okay.
I will make contact with Mr. Farron after the meeting today and let him know.
Great. Okay.
Visit Renee.
Okay.
I'll tell him.
Okay. All righty. Okay. Thank you. Then moving on to item 2, consideration of resolution 1324 to approve purchase of 80 acres of wetland reserve program parcel in Howard Township.
What are you limping?
Okay, Mike Cox.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Well, let's see. This resolution, I guess, is pretty self-explanatory. Authorizes us to move forward with purchase of actually two 40-acre parcels of land that the current owner is moving forward with enrollment through a conservation easement in the NRCS Wetland Reserve Program. That's a perpetual enrollment. That's a permanent easement. And then this owner approached us and said, hey, we'd be interested in offering this to public use. Youth hunting in particular is one of their interests. And offering it to us at residual value. We then started looking for some other support if we were going to go down this road, and Story County Chapter of Pheasants Forever came to the table and said, hey, we want to join in with you on this project. The Department of Natural Resource came to the table and said, hey, we'll join in on this project and give you some funding for it. So end result, those two partners would fund the entire purchase price. This would be a net zero cost to the county, and it would provide 80 acres of eventually would all be restored back to wetlands and prairie northeast of Roland, and that's about a mile about a mile off of our prairie rail trail that we have there right now. So Conservation Board did recommend approval of purchase of this property. So I would just urge you to support this resolution. I do have, I almost forget here, I do have a map that would show you where it is.
Okay. While you're walking, when you get back to the microphone, so county cost in this net zero to acquire it, but then we will be responsible for restoring the prairie and wetlands?
And Mike, also talk about this in relationship to the Jeanette property that we recently was able to acquire and to operate, and then a more recent privately owned donation through the Hertz family that has these are kind of marquee opportunities that the conservation the program is very excited about outreach to private individuals who are willing to partner with us in setting aside land for parks, recreation, hunting, other types of outdoor activities. And this has been something that we're really excited about from the conservation standpoint. So Mike might just touch base a little bit on that as well.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. First off, Rick, your question about restoration work. Through enrollment in WRP, NRCS will fund all of the restoration. Our expenses up front would probably be putting a parking lot in, but that's really about it. So NRCS will fund all the planting, tile investigation, tile removal if necessary, changing tile to non-perf or whatever's necessary there. NRCS will fund all of that. So the obligation to the county initially would be, you know, when and if we decide to put a parking lot there, a small parking lot, and then, you know, just ongoing area maintenance. So that's our obligation. As far as, you know, land acquisition, we've been blessed. You know, when you look at the land values and look at how much land is in public ownership, roughly 3% in the state, you really have to look at these opportunities as, you know, they don't come around all that often, and when they do, if there's a way we can, you know, leverage our support to take advantage of, in the case of the Hertz donation, a private donation of land into the public coffers. In the case of Jeanette, reduced price sale with support from over 120 other organizations and agencies that helped us purchase that. When you look at Dakin's, another purchase that you'll hear about soon. Again, look at all these stakeholder partnerships. The public is saying, we want this land to go into public coffers. We want it available to the public. And, you know, that's clearly what we're hearing here, is that this individual could have made more money off of this land, probably, but really feels compelled to put it into public ownership and, you know, have kids out there learning how to pheasant hunt. And eventually we'll be able to do that again. At any rate, yeah, we are blessed to have pretty rich support of conservation lands. So does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you. Okay. Okay, Board, What action would you like to take regarding this resolution?
Move approval of resolution 1324, approve the purchase of the 80 acres of wetland.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and second the approval of resolution 1324, the purchase of 80 acres of wetland. And here, is there further discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Resolution 1324 is adopted. And thank you, Mike, and thanks also to the Conservation Board for their efforts in this endeavor. Good. Okay, moving on down to item 10, agency report, Youth and Shelter Service. George.
George, my friend, it's good to see you.
You betcha.
Morning, supervisors.
Good morning, good morning.
Had a very interesting meeting talking about our history and conservation.
Thank you very much.
And now we're going to talk about our youth.
All right.
This is Red Ribbon Week. It's a national week dedicated to promoting substance abuse prevention. Today at noon, we're having a march in downtown Ames from our headquarters to City Hall. We'll have a lot of recovering youth, staff, people from the Prevention Policy Board. That's why I'm wearing red today. And if I could ask you to take note, I handed you a couple of things here. Wear red ribbon this week. People ask what it is. You can tell them I support substance abuse prevention for our youth. And then there's also a red piece of paper there where you say, write down something about why you believe in being drug-free and hang that on your office door. The reason several of our staff are not here is they're very busy in the schools and getting ready for the march today. But joining me here today to give the report on treatment services is Jill Hill.
Hi, Jill.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I'll go ahead and start then with the treatment service report. What I've given you this morning is a brochure, but also I've given you a service delivery location map. You may have received this before, but this is the number of clients that we've served in the state of Iowa on the service delivery map for residential treatment. And this goes back to 1981. And so we have served all youth, not all, multiple youth in each county here in the state of Iowa, with the exception of Freeman County on the bottom there on the left-hand side. I'm going to have to do some marketing and just head down there so we can at least get one client from Freeman County that we've served for substance abuse issues. So anyway, obviously you can see we have our pictures of the programs here, and I'm sure many of you have seen Youth Recovery House in particular. 712 House is also in the same area. So this is where we conduct our treatment programming for residential and for outpatient services. Residential, we've given you, I believe you have the data sheet, quarterly report. Just please be aware of the fact that they did not include any carryover numbers from our previous quarter. So for residential, 712 and Youth Recovery House, we've had the opportunity to serve two Story County clients, and the rule of thumb obviously is most of the time for residential treatment, the youth in Story County go away from this area to get service, to get treatment, just because of triggers and risk factors. For outpatient services, whether it be extended outpatient or intensive outpatient, we're still going strong. Even more so now this in the second quarter. First quarter for outpatient services, the rule of thumb is that it's usually a lower client number time frame because summer's in session. And many of the times, especially with our school-based counselors, we're literally going into school when schools are in session, so our numbers for clients are higher. So that's where it reflects in the number of clients that we served for chemical dependency outpatient substance abuse services. It's 17 individual therapy clients served. We've had three OWI assessments that we were able to do during the first quarter. But our intensive outpatient program is still going strong at the Family Life Center in Ames, and we are serving multiple youth that come in three times a week for 6 hours of group counseling. The success rates are phenomenal. We're looking at it being close to 90% of being able to serve the clients at a higher intensity level for outpatient services and preventing them from needing to go into an inpatient treatment program. So I like to toot my horn on this because I absolutely love the IOP program because it really does reduce the cost for the state of Iowa, because the cost for a residential treatment program is pretty expensive for some families, and if we can reduce them leaving their home and being able to serve the family and the client in an outpatient level of care, that's phenomenal. Now, counseling program is doing well as well. We're continuing to try to add on to our licensed mental health counselors, and so there have been multiple ads in the paper to try to add on because mental health services is not going away. It will be here for the duration and substance abuse, so we're trying to add and add more clinicians to be able to serve those youth. Our medication management program, in other words, it used to be called telehealth, their webcam services is phenomenal. We're serving Boone and Story County. We have the equipment. We have two psychiatrists, one in Spencer and the other one in California. And we're continuing to try to market that program and add even more prescribing professionals to our medication management program. And it really does enhance the services that we're providing. So you can see the data here. We're doing very well, a little bit slow because of the summer months, but it's certainly climbing at this point. And then, obviously, we just finished our National Recovery Month, and September was National Recovery Month, and I wanted to thank you for signing the proclamation for that program. I did, for Wayne, I believe I included a photo at our Youth Recovery House site where we had a meet and greet or an open house, and there's a picture there in front of Youth Recovery House of the youth that we had that were able to be involved in the National Recovery Month program. We had multiple radio gigs on KASI in regards to marketing and really promoting the fact that you can have a very healthy and satisfying life as a recovering substance abuse and also recovering mental health issues. So once again, it's definitely a co-occurring combination of treatment program that our treatment services has really gone in that direction. Does anyone have any questions about treatment services in particular?
No. George, will you comment at all about the program that you partner with in Arley Ball as far as you will? Okay.
You have a subcontract with Arley Ball, which is your mental health center now, serving Story County, and we will, through that contract, be able to serve non-system, non-Medicaid clients, but they have to fit some pretty narrow eligibility requirements. I think we've had maybe 10 that we have referred and asked for eligibility approval, but all 10 have been declined.
Who do you have to get the eligibility requirement from? Is there...
It's through Arley Ball.
Okay.
The Kilgore, Dr. Kilgore,
okay.
Who approves
right.
If they meet criteria for right. That funding source.
Right.
So far we've been declined or denied on all of them.
Okay.
We're still continuing to provide services to those youth, though, no matter what.
So what options exist for students like that, for youth that we have identified that perhaps need a program like this? Is there someplace else that they can turn?
It's actually pretty difficult to describe it because we go on a sliding fee scale, and it's the money from asset that's helping us make up the difference so that we can stay within our budget. We did just submit our asset request for next year. We are getting a lot more referrals of children and youth who have mental health problems as the Richmond Center is phasing out of that. And we, in our request to ASSET, are asking for $15,000 more. That's a big jump for us for treatment services specifically for that population.
And you spend 2 minutes, and I'm not asking us to get too far off in the weeds, but talk to me a little about the denials that we're getting or in qualification for these.
You know, and I don't have that because I supervise the substance abuse and not the mental health. I know that, you know, this is a 15, 16-page document of information that we have to do for this funding source. I have not been informed specifically on why they were denied.
Right.
So I, once we get that information, we'd be more than happy to share that with you.
I'd just like to understand it, and I just want to make perfectly sure here. It doesn't mean that anybody's missing services. It means that we're having to find ways to fund it from other sources.
That's correct.
Okay.
Right.
And if we need to, we talk to the participants or the clients about applying for Medicaid, if that's a possibility, so at least they can get on Title 19 eventually.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now we're going to move on to the emergency shelter report, Rosedale Shelter. And things are very, very busy. We're very full. We're getting a lot of referrals from outside of Story County, which we regret because our primary target is Story County. But the 10 beds, more than 10 beds that DHS funds, with the closing of three shelters in central Iowa, there are only two left. One in Des Moines and one here in Ames. We're serving a wide service area, and we're getting kids from all over the state, but in particular from Polk County. Now, I know that's creating a problem for local kids, but the thing that you fund that most other shelters do not have, and that is a bed for non-system, or four beds for non-system kids. That's our ASSET funding and our juvenile court funding. But the other beds, and that's for parent placements, kids who run away, kids who are homeless. And last year we served, as you can see from this report, first line, we served 53 kids who were placed in the shelter and 76 who were diverted from the shelter. Most of our effort now for local kids is resolving things through mediation so that they can return home safely. So that's where we're putting a lot of our effort. That figure has just zoomed up. So the three shelters that closed a year before last in central Iowa are the Polk County-run shelter, the Newton nonprofit shelter, and the Indianola shelter. So YESS and YSS are the only two left. We had our name long before they did. We helped them get started. They picked our name. very close to it anyway. We know that there are a number of kids in detention in Story County and that the juvenile court has talked to you about the increased cost. That's something the state really doesn't help you with, unlike shelter. They don't even cover medication for those kids. And I know you're having to pick up a very big bill. But I want to remind the supervisors that we are there diverting a lot of kids from detention. And always our priority when there's a Story County referral is to make room for them. Sad fact that this week, another shelter closed in Iowa. The Davenport shelter, which just reading in the paper that Davenport is the highest pocket of poverty, they, unlike us, have not had the kind of support that we do from the Board of Supervisors, ASSET, local donors, and they got tired of paying the difference between and going into deficit between what the state reimburses them for, which is $93, and the actual cost of shelter, average cost of shelter is close to $150 a day. And they just got tired of paying or having to come up with the difference, and the Davenport shelter closed, the emergency use shelter. That brings us down to 14 shelters in the state of Iowa. At its height, there were 28.
That's easy math.
So it's not a good time for shelter. The legislature cut shelters by 300,000 last year, a million the year before. So you can see how the numbers of shelters are going down and the reason for it. The state doesn't pay the first full cost of the shelter. You know, you make up some of the difference. It's mandated, but there are only a couple of shelters like ourselves that have beds for non-system kids. Those are the true kids that get diverted.
So how strong is your lobbying effort with the new legislation coming in for any hopes of either restoring or diverting either further cuts, because this topic is being discussed in many locales?
All over the state. It is, of course, we can't lobby, but our board can, our public policy committee can, and this has been a high priority for us for years. The problem is that, I know some of you are probably going to the meeting about domestic abuse shelters and sexual assault shelters. Those are also, they're having funding problems there, and a number of them will probably be reduced. It's just a real tough time to get any funding for human services or any funding restored by our legislature. Our own legislators are very supportive, but it's not across the board. And residential programs are more expensive. That's why we're putting all of our effort into diverting kids away from shelter, and we're pretty successful at that with Story County Kids. But we have a lot of services to offer that other communities don't. You know, all the things that Jill just talked about. So we're working really hard with our boards. And by the way, a couple of our kids and myself went to the DHS Human Services Council hearing on their funding, on their budget for next year. And we asked them to restore the $300,000 to the budget that the legislature had cut last year. Just saw the budget, they didn't restore the money. The governor told them to come in with a budget that was equal to last year. You know, we have this two-year budget thing.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. So no progress there. If we could have had at least DHS with us, that would have helped. So it doesn't look good. If I may switch gears now from the shelter and Davenport, I can assure you, though, that we're doing the very best we can to make room for Story County Kids and to divert them from out-of-home placement, if at all possible. As part of Red Ribbon Week and drug prevention, we are hosting two major events next week. It's entitled The Blunt Truth, and it's about medical marijuana. As you know, there's been a bill introduced to our legislature to allow for medical marijuana in our state, and it's a bill that is very similar to the system that they have in Colorado. So we have invited a physician from Colorado who's very familiar with the negative impact on drug abuse and the increase in marijuana use in the state of Colorado, and he's going to talk about what has happened in Colorado. One of the events, Jill, if you could hand these out, is next Monday, the 29th, and he will speak at the Sunroom of the Memorial Union. I'm sure he'll be faced with a number of people that don't quite agree with him, and that's what we want to do, is open a dialogue. And The next one is the next day on Tuesday.
What's the time for that one? Oh, you got it coming.
The one on Sunday evening is 7 p.m. to 8:30, so it's a short seminar. The next one, I'd really urge the supervisors, if you have time, to consider coming. It's a whole 4 hours, 5 hours, including lunch, no cost to Story County residents. We know that there are a lot of people coming from other counties, and they're going to have to pay $25. But for Story County, it is free, including lunch. We really want to get a lot of people there from Story County. So it's a whole 4 hours debating, talking about the impact of medical marijuana and the movement all across the country. You know, 8 states now have sales of medical marijuana, and it's on the ballot in a number of states. 2 more, yeah.
That I would think it's going to pass, or has a great chance of passing.
Yes. So I hope the supervisors will consider coming to that, and I hope our...
I will try to make the Tuesday one. The Monday conflicts with my MICA board. See that the 29th, and I do know that usually I try to fill in with Rick on the policy prevention board when he's unavailable, but that's the only one that I think I would be able to make, and it will just have to be after our board meeting, because I notice this is on the Tuesday of our board meeting, and so I'll try to come over.
That'd be great.
For
even
part,
if it's
part of that.
Just part of it.
You bet.
You'd be most welcome.
Okay.
Next, we're handing out the quarterly July, August, September full report on the mentoring program, the all of our in-school prevention, substance abuse prevention programs, and our Kids Club program. Kids Club, all of our programs are just doing really well in prevention. But if you would turn to the Kids Club brochure or newsletter and see that big group of about 50 kids, we have a waiting list for our after-school program in Gilbert. We are just packed. Roland Story is very busy. The Ballard program is very busy. All of our junior high programs are underway for after school. It's really going great. Our mentoring program is also off to a good start. And here again, I want to talk about ASSET and our request. And that is... another large request, increase in funding to our ASSET funders, and the reason for our increase, and this one is $25,000, which is a very big increase, is because the Big Brothers Big Sister program has closed in Story County. They are receiving $26,000 from ASSET this year, so they're phasing out the matches that they have now, and they, from what we understand, are not applying for ASSET funding the following year. So we would be proposing to pick up their out-of-school program. Ours is an in-school program, and so we would move into out-of-school programming, which means we would carry our program through the whole year, not just, you know, the 9 months of the school year. So that is a big increase in our request of the supervisor, City County, United Way, and GSB is also in there for funding. Well, I'm talking about the mentoring program. We raise a lot of money because we don't get any state support for that program right now. We raise a lot of money through donations, and we're having our annual walk run. We hope to raise $10,000 and would love to see the supervisors come. You don't have to walk or run if you could just come to support us. And that's coming right up, and we're very hopeful we'll get a good large group there that day to either walk or run. It'll be on the Iowa State campus.
Not the cross-country course, I hope.
Not the cross-country
course. That's a little long.
It's a 5K.
Okay.
Next, I'm inviting all of you to help us celebrate November as Adoption Month. As you know, we have, through our KidsNet program, 500 foster adoptive homes that we oversee through our KidsNet program in collaboration with several other agencies like LSI. And to celebrate that, we're having a Thanksgiving get-together on November the 13th, and our speakers will be a family that has a Story County family from Story City, the Buckles. They have had 90 foster children, and they have adopted 11 of those children, and they have four of their own biological children. So you'll really want to hear about this exceptional Story County family. Incredible family. A lot of the kids that they have adopted are teenagers. And a lot of people don't realize that there's a huge need in that area for those kids to find a permanent home. And this family has adopted a lot of teens. In fact, last year we had the same event, and they attended that event, and some of the kids from the Rosedale shelter were there, and there was a teenage girl that I happened to introduce them to that I knew was looking for an adoptive home. She'll be speaking with their family this year. They adopted her, just like that. It's really great. Her name is Nicole, so you've got to come and hear them. Also, I want to thank the supervisors. I know one or two of you sat in and contributed to a focus group. We have this 2008-2012 long-range plan. Oh, hand it out just so that they can see it. We're very good at YSS on planning.
Oh, I can tell.
And we're now preparing our 2013-18 strategic plan. It's really hard to plan in the nonprofit area and in child welfare in particular. I mean, a lot could change next week after the election. How do you plan for that? It's just really tough doing planning. That's why we do these focus groups, to get the views of a cross-section of the community. We're doing surveys. We're doing key informant interviews. We're really trying to touch every segment of our community, including the youth themselves, about what direction youth services should be going. So I want to thank you for sitting in and contributing to the focus group.
Right.
And we are very busy trying to put together a new plan. But actually, we've come up with 7 directions, but 4 of those directions are kind of tied to what happens with the election. So much of our funding is really hanging in the balance, both in our legislature and in our federal government. And it's tough to figure out what the road ahead is going to be. I wanted to make 2 more announcements to supervisors. We have a new member of our staff who's going to be in charge of quality improvement, and it's someone I think a lot of you know. It's Belinda Meese.
Oh, yeah.
She's the director of the residential program at Beloit. We're very, very excited to welcome Belinda as our quality assurance improvement manager at YSS. And she will be leaving LSI after 12 years at Beloit and coming to work for YSS. We're really very, very happy about that. We also have hired a new CFO, Chief Financial Officer. Our current Chief Financial Officer has been there for 31 years, Nancy Kaltenhauser. She's retiring the first of the year. And we have hired Mindy Stenslin, and this is her background. She has her master's degree in accounting from Iowa State, has been an auditor. She's been had worked for Jacobson Companies as comptroller, has currently works for Iowa State, managing grants, federal grants that they have for prevention at the Prevention Science Institute. She is now, this is her first week at YSS, so we actually have two CFOs right now, and we will for 2.5 months, so she can get her feet on the ground and we can pass things on to Mindy on the first of the year, and she'll have a good grounding. Let's see. One more comment about asset is that it really is working. And you invite us to come and give you a progress report. We don't have to come to each of the funders and talk about, you know, and justify our requests. I did want you to know about the two big requests, which is to pick up the Big Brothers Big Sisters program and also to move more in, of funding into our children's mental health program, because we anticipate upwards of over 100 new clients coming to us. And we do have the contract through Ireley Ball, but it's not, it's so very narrowly defined, and I know you know this, there really isn't a well-defined children's mental health system. It's not very well-defined for adults, even though we've have that new legislation and the redesign and all of that. There is no redesign for children's mental health. So that's something the state is working on. There is a committee working on it, and Jason Hoagland is on that committee from Story County, and he's on our staff. So with that, we'll conclude our report. And again, thank you for this, the support you give us. And we will be back in 3 months.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Good.
Yeah, just, George, just before you go, I was hoping that you could update us on the IME.
Yes, investigation. There really is no major development that has occurred since well, for weeks now, maybe a month. We're cooperating fully. It's still an investigation. No charges have been filed, and I still feel very confident no charges will be filed. We are right now working with them on, we did agree to redo our 2011 cost report. We're still objecting to going back to the cost reports that they had approved in previous years. We've hired a CPA to help us come up with a new methodology, but really there's nothing more on the investigation that's sort of separate from it.
And just help me with, is the question just come down to how YSS has arrived at the cost? It's, they're not even questioning the cost. They're questioning how you arrived at it.
Yeah.
So the it's method, a methodology, the method, kind of.
Yeah. It's really accounting, and they let you do, pick whatever method you want, and they don't tell you what method, but they did not like the method that we used in 2011. So we will keep you posted of any major developments, but there's really nothing more to report.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about this, and thought I wasn't going to weigh in on this, but I just can't help myself, as you guys can appreciate. I have not been shy about questioning things when a service provider or something, when I felt like something was out of line, I've not been shy about questioning. Let me, the job that George and YSS does for the youth in Story County and how professional the organization is, it is just hard for me to fathom that we would be going through what we're going through over a methodological question like this. I mean, we are so fortunate to have you guys in Story County, and the professionalism that you have conducted yourself with and all of YSS, to me, has been beyond reproach. And I think I should have some credibility in this because I am unafraid of questioning things when I see a problem. So I just want to make a show of support here. I support what you guys are doing. I support how you do things. And I'm sorry that you're going through this, and hopefully we can get to the end of it as quick as possible.
We hope so, too. We're told that the average investigation takes 9 months to a year, and we're only in our third month. It just really drags on. But thank you for your support.
Well, I think there's no question that we convey the same sentiments that Rick had just expressed. We have a long-term track record of seeing positive results. And again, I'm not surprised at some of the changes that are happening. There have been some changes in administrative positions within the state and new people coming on board, looking at things differently, questioning things. This is just the beginning of what I think agencies are going to face with as new people come on board, and so it's just, you know, you work with them, but the troubling part is when they don't have clear directions. How can you really be held accountable to something when you don't have clear directions in terms of what they want to have presented? And, you know, this is the same thing that in the mental health arena that counties have faced with years in their cost reporting and how they go about doing that. And hopefully we're trying to arrive at one standardized way that impacts everybody, so the decision makers that are looking at these reports, you know, can see that it's all done in the same way.
Right.
So we do support you, and hope for the best as you go through this. But I know it's certainly not a pleasant task to deal with at all.
Right. And very, very difficult time for us, but we will be a better agency for it. We will grow. We will learn, and we will put that learning to good use in the future. The state has every right to audit us and look very deeply at things, and we are feeling very good that it will be a good outcome. It's just a lot to have to go through.
Right.
The final thing on this is that I will keep the supervisors informed of any major developments. There just really isn't anything more to report. But thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Great. All righty. Okay. Departmental reports, none. Liaison assignments, Paul, anything?
Yes.
Just briefly, I met yesterday with Deb and with Julia Castillo, the executive director of HRDA. The primary of that was the whole discussion. We're still having some challenges during the transition with training for drivers. We're short a number of drivers. We're screening. We're planning to hire three new drivers, hopefully this weekend. We have been getting a few clients that were used to operating under the old system that are having a little difficulty in the transition, especially when you have to dial in to a one call number and then be prompted to queue to go someplace else for the rides. And a lot of the clients are so accustomed to when they want a ride, they want you to be picked up right away and delivered, to be told that you might be a half an hour late or 45 minutes later or an hour and a half, is very troubling for some. And so we're working through some challenges. And I spent some time yesterday with Elizabeth right after Rotary and just assured her that the HRDA board and the executive director were working on this transition, but it is taking a little bit more time, and we hope to have cameras in all of our buses in the very near future, which will help alleviate some of the other concerns that have been addressed. So I'll keep you posted on any new developments with our transportation provider through HRDA. Okay. So with that, public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on the agenda. Okay. All right. No one. Announcements from the supervisors?
Pass.
Pass.
Hearing in second.
Moved in second. Hearing no comments. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Meeting adjourned. 7:20.